Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Screen Nerds Podcast. My name's Michael Burgett, and thanks for joining me for this rescreen episode of Batman, the 1989 superhero film. Just got done rewatching it and wanted to share some of my thoughts and memories of seeing the film for the first time, as well as my thoughts on this latest rewatch. So, like I said, this, you know, is the iconic 1989 Batman film, and I saw it for the first time that summer of 1989 in the theater at Shady Brook Cinema, which if you've listened to some of my older rescreen episodes in the archives, you have heard about this theater. It's the local theater that where I grew up in, and unfortunately no longer exists, but that was where I went to see all the films when I was a kid growing up, and this was no exception. I remember that summer and seeing, you know, this film, seeing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, seeing Little Mermaid. There were a lot of films that year that I saw in the theater, and this was one of them. And growing up, I was a huge Batman fan. I read the comic books, back then, it was before the animated series, but, there was Super Friends and watching, Batman there, and just was super excited to see, Batman on the big screen. And I remember, me and my brother went with my parents to go see it, and just it was just awesome seeing, Batman on the big screen. And I remember, when it came out on VHS, we got the VHS copy of it and watched it. I remember when the NES game for Batman came out, remember renting it at the local video store and playing it. I remember that, that whole year of 89 into 90 was just enthralled by Batman. And it's one of my favorite films. It's one that's always kind of stuck with me as just being iconic, because you had Michael Keaton as Batman, you had Jack Nicholson as the Joker, Kim Basinger as Vicki Vale, even Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent. It was just, just so much good stuff with this film. And it's always been one that I've always kind of went back and rewatched and really enjoyed. But it's been a while since I've seen it recently, and so this has probably been the first time in years that I've rewatched Batman, 1989 version. And I'll say this, it was good to rewatch it again, really enjoyed it. But there definitely were some things that kind of stood out, both, things that I remember and enjoy, and things that it just went over my head and didn't even think about. But watching it this time around, I really thought about it. And so kind of some things first that kind of stood out to me was just some of the lines. There's, the obvious ones like, you want to get nuts, let's get nuts, that Bruce yells out to Joker in Vicky's apartment. And, of course, the other one is, do you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, which gets echoed several times through the film. But one line that's early on in the film that I always loved because it was just so fun to me was early on when Jack Nicholson was not the Joker yet. His character was still Jack Napier, and he is hanging out with his boss's girlfriend, or the girl that he's with, Alicia, and he's kind of playing off how Carl Grissom doesn't know that they're an item, and Alicia's worried about it or whatever. And at one point, Jack goes and looks in the mirror, and Alicia looks at him and says, "You look fine." And then Jack just turns around and goes, "I didn't ask." And I don't know why, but that line and that delivery always just cracked me up. It was just one that was just it was just perfect. Because it's not, the funny thing is, it's not over the top, and it's not wild and zany that Jack Nicholson would get later in the film. Like, he just very much is just this suave, debonair kind of a guy, but at the same time, he's got that sinisterness to him. And I really liked that version early on. Obviously, I like when he goes, you know, full kooky and crazy with Joker, but the early part of the film with when he's Napier, like, you have the elements of that, but you also have elements of just being like this just brash and just hard-edged kind of a character. And so I always loved that line, and it was just when that line came up right at the beginning of the film, I just really enjoyed it. I loved the little nods that Tim Burton, the director, put in for fans to catch. Obviously, like, one of the most obvious ones is early on when Alexander Knox, who's played by Robert Wool, is, you know, trying to get the news story about the Batman, and he's walking through the newspaper offices, and he goes up to the illustrator to get a sketch of Batman, and the illustrator shows him the sketch, and you see the autograph of Bob Kane, who's the creator of Batman. And just, I don't know if I never noticed it before, or for some reason it just stuck with me in this rewatch, but I thought that was a nice little nod there that Burton put in there to pay homage to Bob Kane. One thing that I, for some reason, never noticed, but for this time around I did, was at the beginning of the film when we get introduced to Harvey Dent, who, like I said, is played by Billy Dee Williams. And that press conference, you have, you know, the dignitaries there. You've got Commissioner Gordon, you've got the mayor, you've got several other people, but you also have a seat with a placard that says Bruce Wayne there. And I don't know why that I never just looked at the placard that, you know, have his name there to realize that Bruce was supposed to be there at that gathering. I don't know why I never noticed it, or I never paid any attention to it, but it was just interesting to see that, you know, early on, you know, we see that, you know, that he was supposed to be there at that event. Now, obviously, we know that he has a relationship with the mayor and everybody because the fundraiser is held at Wayne Manor, but it's interesting that, you know, even early on, we see that he's supposed to be at this event. He's not at the event. And there's not really anything made about it either, which is kind of interesting too. One of the things too that stood out to me in this rewatch was the way that Michael Keaton plays Bruce Wayne. Because a lot of iterations of Wayne, he's played off as kind of a playboy. Like, he's goofy. He's irreverent. He's not really taken seriously. Obviously, one of the main versions of this is Batman the Animated Series, and we see the huge dichotomy between Bruce Wayne and Batman. But here, there really isn't that much of a difference, and I don't know why I never really noticed that until now. But I think it's a very interesting performance that Keaton does, because that there isn't really any difference. Like, Bruce Wayne is not goofy. He's not, like, flamboyant in how he, you know, tries to play off of, you know, being a complete opposite to Batman. They're very similar, and I kind of like that. Having this rewatch of and seeing this version of Batman, I actually kind of like that there's not a whole lot of difference between Bruce Wayne and Batman. Like, there's really not that difference. And I think maybe that's because this is like an early version of Batman, and so there's not any, you know, idea of who it could be in any way, shape, or form. And so Bruce can kind of be, you know, himself in a similar way to being Batman as he is to Bruce Wayne. But I thought that was interesting, especially given all the other versions of Batman there is, how there's not really a whole lot of difference between this version of Bruce Wayne and this version of Batman. Another thing that really stood out that really didn't make a whole lot of sense was all the shooting that went on inside of the Axis chemical plant. When, you know, obviously Jack Napier becomes Joker, there is so much shooting going on with guns, not just with the crooks. Like, obviously the crooks are not going to be smart enough to think, oh, maybe I shouldn't be shooting off firearms inside of a chemical plant. But the cops are just as bad. Like, they're just shooting off at everybody. And it's like nobody with any common sense thought, maybe I shouldn't shoot a gun inside of a chemical plant because the sparks could, you know, start a fire or whatever. But what's, you know, also too is as much damage is done in this, you know, firefight that takes place, the plant is able to, you know, recover very quickly to be able to use all the chemicals or whatever that Joker does to poison the, you know, the cleaning supplies and everything. And so, yeah, don't know why, didn't really notice it until now, but that was just kind of a very interesting way of going about that sequence. Another thing too that just, you know, again, surprised me in one way was how, and I guess it goes back to how Jack Napier is a very arrogant character, in that he had two instances where he could have done something different instead of choosing what he did. He could have left, like he could have gotten away scot-free, you know, because we see him see the exit door and there's nobody there and he could have ran and gotten out. But he chooses not to. Obviously, he chooses to point the gun at Commissioner Gordon. And, you know, there's, you know, discussion, blah, blah, blah. Batman shows up or whatever. And then just as he's, you know, about to leave again, he could have shot and killed Gordon. But he doesn't do that. He instead, you know, shoots the crooked cop. Now, obviously, it makes sense in that the crooked cop was the one that, you know, ratted him out, so to speak, to Grissom. And, you know, that they were in cahoots to off Napier. But the fact that he could have killed Gordon, instead just chooses to kill the crooked cop, just it's just an interesting dynamic that there could have been several different things that happened, but because, you know, A, his arrogance, and B, his not thinking, you know, we end up with the way it ends up. Couple other things too that was kind of question marks that I thought about as I was watching this over again. At one point at the dinner, Bruce and Vicky are, you know, eating and talking, and this was after the scene, obviously, of the fundraiser that takes place that Vicky Vale is at, along with, you know, Alexander Knox, and, you know, all the dignitaries or whatever. But when Bruce and Vicky are having the dinner, Bruce asks Vicky if she had any trouble finding the house. And this is just a weird question, because why would she have a hard time finding the house when she literally had just been there for the fundraiser? So I don't know if that was just Bruce making a joke that, you know, hey, do you have any hard time getting here, you know, considering you were just here, or, you know, he had forgotten that she had just been there. I don't know. Never really noticed that until this time around that was, you know, that was asked, because, yeah, she was just there. And so that just kind of really didn't make a whole lot of sense. Another thing that didn't make a whole lot of sense was whenever Vicky asks Knox about getting the file on Bruce Wayne, Knox gives her a file and there's barely anything in it. Now, for a billionaire to, you know, be living in a city like that, you think that the newspaper would have a bigger file on that billionaire, but there's barely anything in it. And then later on, when he finds the microfiche film of what happens to the parents, it's like, again, shouldn't that be something that, you know, is prominent in Bruce Wayne's file? Like, I don't know why this time around it, that kind of stuck out to me as being there, but yeah, it almost feels like those two things should have been combined at one point, either Knox says, you know, I'm still looking for the files, blah, 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 whatever, and, you know, finally finds everything, including that, or that should have just been there at the beginning, but that just feels like a weird kind of plot point there where there's not a whole lot of information on Bruce, but obviously, you know, if Bruce is going to be invited to the press conference of Harvey Dent and, you know, he is a billionaire or whatever, that there would be more information at the newspaper about him. So that just, I don't know why, but that just kind of stuck out to me as just being interesting. One thing too, and I love Jack Nicholson as Joker, but also Jack Palance as Carl Grissom. Like, they don't have a whole lot of scenes together. There's only, like, I think maybe two or three where they're together, but they just work together so well. And I would have loved to have seen like a full film with those two characters just going off of one another, like because they work so well here. Like, they were just so just over the top and just played off of each other so well. I would have loved to seen like a full film where those two are the leads and they're just, you know, going at each other. You know, they could have been, you know, two gangsters, you know, rival gangsters, you know, going after one another. They could have been two cops. I would love to have seen more with them working together because they just work together so well and really enjoyed how they played off of each other. Speaking of things that played off of each other, obviously the music in this film is so iconic. I mean, you have Danny Elfman who does the score, and then Prince with the songs like Party Man and Trust, and it was so good listening to that music. It just reminded me of how well done this film was, and the visuals like really do hold up pretty well. Obviously there's some shots and you can tell it's late 80s with the technology and everything, but a lot of, you know, miniatures and models and things like that. But I mean, there's a lot of practical stuff here, and, like, you know, this is before the CGI era where, you know, everything's CGI. And so here, you know, you have miniatures and practical effects and, you know, using different ways to get the shot in. But for the most part, those things still hold up. And that to me, again, shows when you can have practical effects and things like that, it really does help out in some ways to be able to do that. You know, I mentioned the animated series. Like, I almost feel like that rewatching this version, I could see like the homages that the animated series does take because of the way the gothic look and feel that Tim Burton has for this version of Batman. As well as, you know, seeing the 60s Batman with how Joker looks and Cesar Romero, I think almost in some ways gave kind of a template for Nicholson's Joker, because I can kind of see that look. But I really feel like it's more of the look and feel of this Batman that really does play into the animated series. But one thing that I don't know why I never noticed or didn't think about, I always just assumed that it was like the animated series and that it was kind of out of time. Like, it has the look and feel that doesn't really fit present day or, you know, old school thing, but this film is supposed to be set in present day. And the way it does that and the way I noticed it was whenever Bruce Wayne is looking at Jack Napier's file from the police and it shows his rap sheet and the notes in there, there are notes that give dates, and one of the dates says 86. So I guess, you know, that's the key that makes you supposed to see that, oh, this is present day Gotham City. And so that's just, yeah, that was interesting because I never really noticed the date on the file there, but this time around I did. And so I thought that was interesting and cool. One thing that really stood out to me this time around too was whenever we get to the scene where, you know, all the cleaning household items are poisoned with Smilex, and, you know, we're supposed to see the effects of people not using it. The only people that we see that it really affects are the newscasters. Like, they're the ones that look all haggard and just in a mess and everything. But everybody else looks fine. Like, nobody else seemed to have a problem with not using deodorant or shampoo or whatever. But the newscasters, for some reason, are the only ones that have a problem with this. And it just looks so exaggerated and over the top. And that was just funny to me that, you know, they're the ones that seem to have such a hard time with this, but they do. And I just thought that was really funny. A couple other things that stood out to me in this rewatch was how did Knox pick Vale up to bring her downtown whenever the parade is going on? Because when we previously see Vicky, she's in the Batcave with Bruce, and then he says, you know, he's got to go to work or whatever, and, you know, he leaves and she's still in the Batcave. So how does she get from the Batcave to wherever Knox is so that Knox can drive her to downtown? Like, that, I don't know why, but that just kind of stood out to me there. And another thing too was, and, you know, this is getting toward the end of the film, was the question of, was Batman actually trying to kill Joker? Because we see him throughout the rest of the film with everybody else. He's not actively trying to kill people. You know, even the hoodlums at the beginning, he doesn't do that. But there are several instances at the end of the film where it does seem like that he's actually trying to kill Joker. Like, the when he's in the Batwing and he's flying in and he gets Joker on target and he's, like, shooting at him. It's like, is he trying to kill him, or is he, what's he doing there? And then when you get to the top of the chapel or whatever, you know, he tries to throw Joker off the top of the cathedral, and obviously Joker hangs on and then does fall to his death, but not technically because of Batman. But it's just interesting because it's like, is that question of, is he actually trying to kill Joker, or is he just, you know, saying that he's going to do it to just freak out Joker? I don't know. But that, again, that's another one of those things where I just noticed it for some reason this time around that I didn't notice it before. And one more thing, poor Bob. Like, you know, I know Bob's a bad guy. He was, you know, he's the second in command to Joker. But I always felt bad that he got killed off for no good reason whatsoever. Like, he wasn't incompetent. He never did anything wrong. He actually did everything right for Joker. But because of, you know, I guess because, you know, Joker's nuts and he does whatever he wants to and there's no rhyme or reason. Like, that's the explanation as to why Bob gets killed. But I feel like hashtag justice for Bob. Like, he, you know, if he was, you know, incompetent and didn't do the right thing or whatever, okay, I get then why Joker would, you know, get rid of him. But to get rid of him because Batman did something completely unexpected, I don't know. That just, I always, even as a kid, I always thought that that was kind of, Bob got done dirty there. But overall, like I said, I love this film. It's one of my favorites. And rewatching it again was just great. It just reminded me of, you know, when I was a kid and saw it on the big screen for the first time. And it definitely does have some flaws here and there, but it's still, it's one of the benchmarks for superhero films. Like, we would not have the superhero films we have today if not for Batman 89. Like, it is one of the most iconic films. It's one of the biggest films, and it came out in one of the best film years, 1989. And so a lot of good things. Really enjoyed it. Glad I got to rewatch it. And I hope that I hope that this is a film that you revisit too, if you haven't already, because it's one that's worth checking out. So that's my thoughts and memories on Batman. I'd love to hear your thoughts and memories. You know, when the first time you saw it, like, what are some of your favorite scenes from this film? I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And you can share your thoughts anytime by email, screennerdspodcast@gmail.com. You can always find us on Twitter @screennerdspod and tweet your thoughts there. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky just by searching Screen Nerds Podcast, hitting that like button, hitting that follow button, and sharing your thoughts there. And if you get an opportunity, please rate and review and subscribe to the podcast. We're on all the places that you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, CastBox, Amazon Music, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. If you would, leave a written review, hopefully leave a 5-star review, and share the podcast around and let others know about the Screen Nerds Podcast. So again, thanks for joining me for this rescreen episode. My name is Michael Burgett, and we will catch you on the next episode.